In typical fashion,
Yes.
in 11 minutes, I need to just take something out of the oven.
That's amazing. What are we baking?
I know, isn't it amazing the fact that I don't think I've used my oven in 20 years.
Well, what are you baking? You didn't answer the question.
Oh, I'm baking,
Figgy pudding.
yes, I'm baking figgy pudding.
I knew
Well, why
it.
would I do that when I could just call Collins Street and have them
That's
send me one?
true. Well, do they have figgy pudding?
Isn't figgy pudding the same thing as fruitcake?
I don't know. We should get Hayden on the
I
blower.
know.
I think
Find
it's
out.
different.
Maybe it is.
Because it doesn't have figs, does it?
Well, his doesn't, but
Right.
some of the ones in England might.
Really?
I know it's the same as Christmas
Oh,
cake.
here
I
we
know
go,
Christmas.
England.
Start drinking.
Yeah. Okay, I did not realize that. Huh. Okay.
Yes. So I'm baking. I'm baking Chrissy Teigen's recipe for chocolate chip Chex Mix cookies.
I don't know what to say to that. Was
I
this in Good
don't know. I
Housekeeping?
think.
McCall's?
Yeah, no, I don't read either of those.
Ms. What was this in?
Ms. Remember Ms.
Yeah.
Mademoiselle? Teen People. I was in Teen
on the side
People.
of a case of Tab, Dynamite. What was it in?
Yeah, it was in Cosmopolitan, right next to the right next to the tribute to our good buddy.
Burt Reynolds?
Yes, actually that's better.
Who's
Yes,
our
our
good
tribute.
buddy?
Why did I just blank out his name after I just got so we got so upset about him? Oh my God,
We
what's wrong with
were
me?
upset about. Oh, this is disappointing.
Mrs. Maisel, what's his name?
Oh,
Lenny
the
Bruce.
husband.
No,
Yeah.
Lenny
Oh,
Bruce.
yes, Lenny Bruce.
Yes, it was right next
Why
to the
was he
tribute to
in
Lenny Bruce.
Cosmopolitan?
That was where that headline was. That was like, he was a real person with a scandalous life. Helen Gurley Brown would not be happy.
No, I have a great record from her.
From
Where she,
Helen Gurley Brown?
yes, where she answers all your dating questions.
Ooh, that is a
It
good
is
one.
wonderful. Yeah. It's around the era of Sex and the Single Girl. It's lovely.
Do you listen to that
So
right after you listen to Free to Be You and Me?
I kind of use Carol Channing as a bit of a palate cleanser in between the two of those things.
That's
But
actually nice. That's like
yeah.
quite the trifecta of ladies.
No, it is. And it's just feels they're not holiday themed, of course, but it just gets you in the mood for frankincense and myrrh and
Gold.
chocolate chip Chex Mix.
They look amazing considering I baked them.
Well,
It's like
let's just
the
wait
sweet and
till they get out of
salty.
the oven. Let's not start patting ourselves
Well,
on the back
most of
just
them are
yet.
out. I'm on the last batch.
Really? Okay.
This is a huge undertaking for me. The
How
funny
long
thing
have
was
you been?
way too long because I had to buy not only every ingredient like flour and sugar, but
Yeah,
I also had
okay.
to buy a hand mixer and a mixing bowl because I did
Wow.
not own either.
Wow. Okay. Well,
The
so this is
only
some
thing
dedication.
I know how to make, like truly, and I kill it, is I make a really mean lasagna from scratch. Like I can't make grilled cheese without burning it, but I can
Right.
make lasagna that takes hours and hours.
Interesting. That's a weird of the things that one could easily. Do you make the noodles by hand?
Well, I don't put them in like the noodle processor, but I don't do the
Oh, sure, the
pre-baked.
noodle processor. Yeah, I got one of those. I think I
That's the
registered for one
thing
of
where you
those.
put the stuff in it and it like
You
shoots up
mean
and
the
it.
pasta maker?
Yeah, that's the
Oh, goodness, we're off to a start.
This is Why, with your hosts, Heidi Hedquist and Luke Poling.
Should we go over our Christmas list
Yes.
for folks? So,
If we can remember it.
I know. Can you hear that?
What?
It's the spirit of Christmas.
Leaving the
Can you please just play
building.
along once? Could you just yes and me one
Yes,
time?
yes.
Thank you. It's the spirit of Christmas. So let's go over what... Well, we're not actually going to go out and get these things.
We're not?
I'm not paying for something to be sent to a bridge.
I don't know. I think it depends on what it is.
But these aren't gifts we're going to actually send, because being on the show is gift enough.
Yes, indeed.
Sort of. But we are going to go through... Yeah, true. So we're going to go through our guests and offer a few gifts in the spirit of the season. Anything off the top of your head where we're like, this is what this person needs?
Oh, there used to be so many, but
because my first thought, my first thought is that Callie, our nude art model,
yes,
I think a robe with Flash's face embroidered on the back of it might be nice.
Oh, I think that would be nice.
Like a work gift. I don't know. Right. Just, I wonder if that's like what everyone gets her for Christmas or the holidays, you know?
I wonder if she does have a lot of robes. But she like wouldn't have one like this, like a satin.
Right. But
robe.
For a nude art model, is a robe kind of the equivalent of a coffee mug for a teacher?
Do you think teachers get a lot of coffee mugs?
Oh, I think so. Don't you or a plaque that says number one teacher or stuff with apples on it, right?
Yeah, there is all the stuff.
It's got to be. Yeah.
We could get her some like slippers too with flash on it. But I like the robe better.
Yeah, I think that might be nice.
It's like, I think like because you know what's interesting? Finding
what?
A satin boxing robe is very difficult.
And that story is
because I wanted one for my boxing.
See.
And
were you going to have your fighting nickname on the back?
Mm-hmm.
Which would be?
The fashion statement. I kid you not, that is what my trainer called me.
The fashion statement?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it.
Well, I mean, you know.
Headquist shot? Something like that? No?
That's terrible.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And happy holidays to you and yours at this giving time of this year.
I mean, I'm sure it was because I was not, you know, it was when I first, I'm sure I was not doing anything great, but I looked good. So that's
right,
why I became
sure.
the fashion statement. There's far worse things I could be.
True. Do you have walk-up music yet?
No, I need it.
We should work
have
on
my,
that.
I have my entrance and exit music for my autobiography, but.
I see. And that would be?
Well, I actually have to get rid of one of them. I have to get rid of my entrance music because it's been
sort
of...
Was it a Me Too?
Well, not directly, but it's been sort of hijacked by some very evil people. So, but I used to want my entrance music to be Sympathy for the Devil, but I can't do it anymore.
Who hijacked it?
Been on too many bridges.
Don't you dare say the devil.
Oh, Trump.
Who hijacked it? Who,
Trump
the devil?
Totally hijacked it.
No, he didn't.
No, he's not cool enough to be the devil. Oh my gosh, he plays it all the time.
No, you're thinking you can't always get what you want.
No, he plays Sympathy for the Devil, too.
Seriously?
Yes.
That's...
Or at least he did once, but once was enough for me to say
yeah,
I can't make
true.
This
okay,
my entrance
enough,
music anymore.
Enough. Yeah.
And then my exit music is my favorite song of all time.
Wait, give me a second. Let me
you
see.
You know
here.
It. You know it.
No, I'm sure I do. Maneater?
No, but maybe that'll be my new entrance music.
I don't know.
More than a feeling.
Oh, because they say Detroit.
They don't say Detroit. You are from Boston, and you totally fucked up Boston.
Oh my goodness! This
and confuse them with Journey.
I'm sorry. I am sorry. I apologize to the city and the surviving members of the band.
That is,
do you want to know what my walk-up song would be?
I don't know. I think we have to end. This might be how it ends.
No. Guess what? Do you think my walk-up song would be?
What?
Because if you ask the kids, they know the answer.
Well, I'm sure they do. Because you probably make them
Snowman.
Play it every time. But only in August.
Right, yeah. All right, yeah. So Callie, we got a robe.
Okay, well, at least we can check her off our list. This is like me actually Christmas shopping. One person off our list.
Right, we got one person off our list. So I think for Gary, our Loch Ness Monster hunter, I feel like binoculars, maybe? Or paper mache supplies so he can make his own Loch Ness monster.
I think paper mache. Yeah. He's probably got binoculars.
Yeah. What do you think his nickname is?
Nasty Nessie.
Yeah. I feel like our mascot, the KC Wolf. Yes. I think just some Febreze would be nice.
It's Febreze.
Is it?
That's what he's told us. He said that multiple times.
I thought he said Febreze, as in...
No, he said Febreze, as in, I'm a mascot. It's a special blend. Should we get a transistor radio for the Gilligan's Island guy?
That would be great, yes. And I feel like for our travel expert, he might like that as well.
Oh, that's true. There are a few people that would like that.
Yeah. I
feel like they might like that in Sealand.
That's true. That's very true. Or maybe just a good board game.
Well, we can get a board game. Clue we should just buy for everybody.
That's
and say
true,
we're
yeah.
coming to play it with them, and I'll only play it by Miss Scarlet.
There we go. Yeah. With the candlestick, right?
In the conservatory.
Yeah, Nina, I think we just get her old bread and she'll be seventh heaven.
I think it's got to be like Fruity Pebbles and marshmallow fluff.
Is that what Nigella is now asking for?
Yes.
Oh, there you go. Molly, our competitive eater, I feel like maybe a nice dinner set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe one of those like camping where it's like a fork on one end, a spoon on the other with the serrated corner to be a knife.
Yeah. And maybe the... I feel like she'd have one of those trays that's sort of trisected, where you have your different, where the food doesn't touch.
I think her food touches. I'm pretty sure when you're working that fast.
Food touches. I can't believe we didn't ask her that question.
We should have asked her that. Do you get upset if your food touches?
Yeah.
What about David Kuchar?
Oh, new friends.
Maybe we should get him something from Goop.
Hope that maybe him and Gwyneth hit it off.
Yeah. Now that she and Mario Batali can't be friends anymore.
Right. No, that's a very good idea. I think that would be perfect for him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously in the spirit of like, you know, ease and cross promotion, we would certainly get Coach Kane cozy love pants.
Definitely, yeah. And I think Mike Mullane, our astronaut, those would be comfy in space.
Oh, those would be great in space. I agree.
Yeah. You have to take them off to do anything.
Yeah. Our Rocky Horror friends probably, I don't know, maybe some Skims from Kim Kardashian to go, you know, a new corset.
Sure. Or cozy love pants, because that would be great to perform in those, too.
That would be good, too. Yeah. Garter belts and cozy love pants.
All right, anyone else? I mean, all of these people deserve something, like a sweatshirt with Flash on it.
Oh my god, I would wear that every day. Why don't we have that?
I don't know. That was something we could also do for Felix. I think that would go over well.
Felix would be awesome.
Yeah.
Felix, and I think we could get one for Jesse when he's carrying the wife over the finish line.
Like cross marketing.
And for Mark. Actually, we could get robes for Mark Roberts and Callista.
Yeah. Or Harry, right?
Or Harry. We got a lot of people we could get robes for.
Yeah, a lot of nudists we could get robes for.
Honestly, we could probably get one for Molly, too, because, you know, pants have to get tight eating all that food.
Right, yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, Satori Circus could probably use a robe. We'd get makeup on it, but...
Yeah. Same with Misty.
Michael Wayne Foster.
For the burlesque. Oh, please. Is there something where you... Like, baby oil, does that come out of robes? I don't know.
Yes, it does.
Okay, good. Perfect.
Yes, I do know.
You said that very like... Yep. Yes. Uh-huh. Next question.
Yep.
Blue, that'd be great. Elizabeth Craig, our cozy mystery writer, that'd be perfect. Something
perfect
nice and cozy.
Yes.
Yeah, cuddle up by the fire.
Right?
Yeah, be great.
Everybody.
Mark Shaw, I think he'd really, be great for him.
Right. Carolyn Bright, she would love it. Like when you're getting ready to be a bridesmaid, you're sitting
That's
around
true.
In your robes.
You know what? I think we...
Vanessa, she needs a robe too.
Yeah.
How do we get a deal on 56 robes? 58, because we need them too. Todd Turfey, if he ever goes back to wrestling or in, over his, you know, tights and mini jean before they go on stage.
Yeah, and what better way to sort of unwind after a day of walking among the common people for the King of the Texas Renaissance Festival to put on a robe and hang out. Yeah.
I think we just found the one universal, great unifier for all of our guests.
Yeah,
they all need a robe.
Have thought this. Are we pitching the show all wrong to people?
I know it should be.
I think it. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
you look like the kind of person who could use a robe. Would you be like on our show? Yeah. Let's give this a shot and see how this goes.
I'm ready.
Okay. So I guess let's start. What were your... Do you have early memories of summer camp? Did you go as a kid?
I did. I went for two brief seasons. And my memories of summer camp were not really... I played guitar in the show. So it was very brief time, but when I think of summer camp, I think of Surprise Lake Camp because I started there in 1995.
Mm-hmm. And what brought you there? Was this anything from your own summer camp days or something else?
Well, my wife actually found it. We were looking for a... We did one summer at another camp and weren't really thrilled. And I said, you know what, I'm done with summer camp. I'm just going to stay home and record my music for these different companies. And so she completely ignored me and then called me into the room and said, we have an interview at Surprise Lake Camp. So that's how I actually started. And I became the Neil Diamond Music Supervisor Specialist.
So what was your job there? Not that every camp has it.
We'll
go back to the Neil Diamond stuff because not every camp has one of those.
Well, Neil Diamond went there as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So he endows the position, more or less, although I've never met him. I basically joined as a music specialist, meaning I'm in charge of everything musical there, you know, from the services to the plays to getting kids to sing and, you know, at Roundup, which is 15 minutes before the meal. You know, just wherever there's music.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I met Pete Seeger. I was asked to join Pete on stage after he heard a concert that I did with some kids. It was Shomrei Adama Day, which means Keepers of the Earth. And so we sang songs about habitats, and I made up a song about cicadas. I rewrote a Gershwin song called... you know, the one, Let's Call the Whole Thing Off. You say cicada. I said, I changed to Let's Call Them All Just Bugs. Yeah. Anyway, it was cicada season. And so we sang, you know, you say cicada and I say cicada. Anyway, so there was a lot of buzz about the concert afterwards, mainly by the cicadas. You know, Pete heard what I did. He was in the audience. And my dad played guitar and he had... bunch of Pete songs in a songbook on the piano, and he'd play some of the songs, and you know, so Pete actually asked me to join that day, and he was going to schedule to do a concert at Surprise Lake Camp. So I had no idea what he was going to do, but as a graduate of the Afro-American Studies, I was an Afro-American Studies major, jazz major at New England Conservatory, got my master's degree, my wife got her opera degree there. I figured I could handle, you know, playing Pete stuff, you know, have a good enough ear, and I could pick up and follow Pete, and I joined him on stage at the Eddie Cantor Theater. That's who started he endowed the theater. Eddie Cantor went there as well.
So
that was my first, the funny thing is, and this is the honest truth, every time I worked with Pete, for some reason, I was not nervous. I don't know why. Once I did a big concert with him for the 50th anniversary of Israel. We were in Central Park, 35,000 people. And I turned to Pete and I said, do you ever get nervous? And he said, I probably should. But he never did. So maybe that, I don't know, maybe that became gleaned off on me. Anyway, when I met him that night, he asked for my phone number. It's like, oh my gosh, okay. And he became a main part of my musical education. You know, he was an amazing educator. He was great with kids, all ages, you know. And anyway, I just retired teaching music at Middle College High School. But it's a wonderful school, beautiful staff, small high school in Long Island City, New York. However, I was the only music person. So, you know, music department meetings were very interesting. And the truth is that the Pete really became like, I started realizing that the best way to do stuff was the way he did it. Although he never said, Paul, do it this way. You know, that's not how we operated.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one thing led to the next. The truth is that I never really set out to be a music educator. And he was an amazing educator, you know, very naturally. And I was given an award upon graduating the Aaron Copland School of Music for the most promising music educator, something like that.
Ooh.
You know, and I didn't even want to go to the ceremony. My mother was furious at me. There was actually a monetary award too. Anyway, so I reluctantly agreed to make it a music ed degree. My parents pushed me and said, "Oh, it'll be a great thing in case you don't become a famous studio musician." But it was my involvement with playing with Pete made me a better teacher. Of course, you know, being married to the right person and also having children does make you a good teacher.
Doesn't hurt
as well, but it doesn't hurt. But I watched how he involved everyone. It was amazing. It was never a show, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He could always. He made every audience member feel like, you know, we're all in this together. You know, your voice is beautiful. It makes a difference. And as an educator, if you get your class to feel like, hey, you know, we're learning this together and your voice counts, it's more fun, more engaging, and less top down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, in 1995, one of my, so I had knowledge high school and the international high school. And one of my students from the international high school, Juan Carlos Santa Cruz, was killed in an American Airlines crash going to see his grandma in Colombia. And the school was in mourning, very sad. And I had just met Pete, as I said, that summer. And I don't know, we were gathered around a circle, and I said, I just met Pete Seeger, I don't know. And I called Pete up and see if he wanted to do something, and he canceled his plans, and he joined me at LaGuardia Community College, and we started this Juan Carlos Santa Cruz Memorial Fund at the International High School, and Middle College was there, and they started a scholarship, and then he kept coming back, and he kept calling me for different things. He called me. He came back for 4 years, from like 96 to like 2000. And he helped the scholarship continue. He even came to my guitar classes at Middle College High School. It was all through starting at Surprise Lake Camp. So that's how that happened. And it's been, you know, it was, I'm now living in Beacon, and 1 month, we visited him quite a bit, you know, at the house there.
So how long into knowing him did you sort of feel like, oh, we have a relationship here, we're friends?
It's interesting. Well, I think when he started calling me and asking me, like, I have so much correspondences from him, and he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. I think it was probably a year or two. I mean, he started asking me, can I come to the international high school, or can we get together? I want to do something a little different at Surprise Lake Camp for the kids this year. There. And I would say, I think it was, see, my kids attended Solomon Schechter School in Queens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was when he started, you know, those concerts that he was doing at the international high school. Well, this is a funny story. I think this kind of made us closer. And he one day my son is in class, and the social studies teacher is teaching about Jose Marti. You know the song Guantanamera?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Guajira. Anyway, so she starts teaching about, you know, Jose Marti, the Cuban poet, revolutionary philosopher, and this poem put into a song about, you know, by Pete Seeger. And my son Joshua raises his hand and says, he's staying at my house, you know, this weekend. You know, kids say something, the teacher thought he was a wise guy, you know. But, you know, they just say something and they shut up, you know. So she calls me, your son made this claim that Pete Seeger's, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, so Elaine gets a brainstorm when we bring the Schechter School to LaGuardia and we do a concert there. And what anything, one thing led to the next, you know, and he kept calling me. And he was very interested in my family and I. We to the kids about chopping wood. I remember being very concerned as a city boy from Queens. He'd give my kids an axe.
Right.
He said, oh, don't fuss with them. Just let them. Oh, okay. And they take out their video camera, and you know, this way the kid laughs at dad trying to chop wood, and then watch Pete, you know, like an expert marksman, you know, chopping wood. And we'd take hikes there, and the kids would tap the trees. And it was just my family and him, and it felt very close. We'd have lunches there, you know. He didn't eat out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all about, I guess, you know, listening to him talk and about his, you know, stories from on and on. And, you know, we just got closer and closer. And when my son was, I think it was when Joshua was bar mitzvahed, Elaine had an idea, and we brought Pete to, she created this idea, One World Music Festival. And, you know, my son wanted like a fancy bar mitzvah, and we said, no, we're not doing that. Let's have something that has some meaning. And he fought us on all his friends at DJs and stuff, you know. So we brought Pete to the Forest Hills Jewish Center. Mm-hmm. She had this idea, and she brought the Shashmaquam Bukharin musicians, and, you know, we raised money to send kids to summer camp. And so we did events like that. And it was, you know, it was pretty successful. I mean, we sold out the synagogue. And Elaine and I performed some song we had won a contest for called A New Heart. And we wrote the song called Rainbow People. And Pete seemed to just fit right into all of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I'll keep going. Elaine, I remember this. Elaine's in the car, and she says, you have to tell Pete he has to wear a yarmulke, a kippah, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was very nervous about this, you know, because I didn't want to have to tell anybody. But that was like, you know, that's what you do.
Right.
So on the way, I tell Pete, I said, listen, and I gave him one of these kippahs that just go right on the head. And he said, well, I said, you have to wear this. And he goes, well, I don't want to be spiritually naked, you know? And that was his... And he wore it the whole time.
Now, I'm assuming you guys had a special relationship as musicians, being able to understand and kind of communicate on that level. You were a lot mm-hmm. more, or let's say Pete was a little more amateur in the training than you were. What was that like, that kind of back and forth?
I'd hate to say that Pete Seeger was amateur and I was trained. I would say that, you know, my son, when he was about 5, my youngest said, who's better? He called him Grandpa Pete. Who's better, Grandpa Pete, you or my dad? And, you know, and he would say, well, I'm good at certain things. And, you know, I had a lot of training, but I had to retrain myself because what I was overplaying like crazy when we do these Pete events, whether he asked me to do something in the city. And I had to really look at it from a different perspective. I mean, about what I was really doing and how it was supporting what he was doing, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big learning experience for me, you know. One of his famous quotes was, he always said, it's not a question of is it good music, but what is the music good for, you know?
Mm.
And so I had to rethink all this fancy, you know, jazz chords, you know, 30,000 chords. No, I don't need that for playing with Pete. But you needed there was something else that was perhaps more important. And I think that the biggest message that I got from him was, you know, how to make my music, you know, mean more than just, you know, somebody enjoying it, but how to get people thinking about it. Because I'd often say to students that if Pete was right here, he'd say, well, there's something that you're good at, you know, something that you can do to make the world better, whether it's through art or dance or singing or painting or science or math. I mean, and he would say there's something everybody can do. So that's what I think he helped me think about. What could I do through music rather than just... And it's not, listen, I love great fancy jazz stuff, and I listen to a lot of different kinds of music. But somehow, playing for kids and getting them to sing along and hearing their voices, you know, joined together, it seems to go to the heart of what I learned from him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That was a big part of it, you know?
So he almost taught you more by having you play less, in a way.
He never would say. He would never correct or mm-hmm. change. But, like, we did a recording session together. I had gotten permission. This was a funny story. In 2010, we recorded quite early morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gotten... I said to Pete, I want to do this, I'll record this with you, and we're going to raise some money and send the proceeds to Surprise Lake Camp. So he's like, sure, but I don't know who my publisher is. He didn't know the publisher, and he just writes me a random card, handwritten, I hereby give Paul Suchow permission to record quite early morning. Anyway, so we set up the recording at my little cabin in camp,
mm-hmm.
which was near Beacon. The camp's in Cold Spring. So my friend Joe comes up and we convert my little cabin into a little studio. You know, we had to shut off the refrigerator, you know, And we try to, you know, when Pete goes there, everybody was trying to get in and we just wanted to keep everybody away, you know. So we do this recording session and it's just banjo and me, and then we add drums later. But we set it up, and the funny thing is, I'm going in, you know, I'm setting up the studio. Yeah, I set up the studio, and then I have to go get Pete, and my friend says, you know, we have to bring some food. So I go into the kitchen of Surprise Lake Camp, and I say, I go to the head of the kitchen, and I say, Al, I need some food. You're not allowed to take food out of the dining room, Paul. I said, well, I need food. He kept on saying no. I said, well, it's for Pete Seeger. He said, well, why did you say so in the first place? Anyway, so he gives me this food, this tray of tuna fish and cheese fries. And my drive and my son's Honda Civic to pick up Pete and his banjo and his guitar at his house. And we give him this aluminum tray of food, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he sprawled out his long legs in the back without telling us. He sticks the tuna and cheese fries under the driver's seat. Anyway, we're so busy. We go back to camp. We do the recording session. We play for kids. And then we forget about it. So that was July 2010. In September, my youngest son is driving in the back. Joshua was driving Ruben to a soccer game. He didn't know why the car smelled so bad. Anyway, I told Pete the story. I said, you put her under the seat. You didn't even tell us.
Now, I saw Pete play at the Newport Folk Fest in 2011, and there was a smaller gathering after the show, and him and Ramblin' Jack Elliott played a couple songs together. And on stage were trading stories about their buddy Woody. And in moment, I was just, it kind of hit me again. Like, you guys knew Woody Guthrie. Like, you were friends. You all hung out together. Did you have any...
Not me, but...
Well, did you have any of those moments where you sort of realize who you're hanging out with? The legacy of this man?
And like I said, I was so relaxed going to his house in Beacon with the view and the... just having lunch there. Yes, because he would tell me stories. I mean, when you hear someone just talking, let's say, about Eleanor Roosevelt or, you know, that you played with, you know, I mean, you realize the breadth of his impact in the world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When I speak to him after he receives a Grammy Award and tells me that he didn't really have a good time. Or when I spoke to him after he sang with Bruce Springsteen at Obama's inauguration, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he said, Paul, all I had to do was memorize those five verses, This Land Is Your Land. I said, Pete, you've been singing that for 70 years. He didn't even want to, Bruce Springsteen talked him into going. When I hear stories like that, I was like, yes, I realize who I'm talking to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Bruce made it easy. He sent a private car to his house, and they took a private plane, and he was freezing out, and he sang with this big choir in Bruce. And then at the end, you know, I think Obama asked or shook his hand and spoke to him. And I think Bruce asked him to come back to a party. He said, I'd rather just go back home. So he just did the inauguration, went back home. So that was him. He was never about all the stuff that was written about him. He didn't take that too seriously. I mean, like, my son found in the bedroom the Grammy Awards that were not hung up. They were just under his shirt.
Well, he didn't have a good time.
He did. No, I mean, not just that. The National Academy of Arts and Sciences, all the highest awards you can win. My point is, they were never, like, on the wall. Like, if I got anything like that, it would be on the wall.
Right. It'd be my hood ornament. I mean,
it would be my hood ornament, too. But that was him, you know? It was never about, and I would say, with all this Zen mindfulness, he was always in the moment. Wherever we were, he was just in that moment. It was not about, and he treated the same guy that worked on the Clearwater boat as he did, you know, President Obama. He didn't treat anybody differently. So I did realize it, but I would think about it later, you know. And originally, as a musician, a studio musician trying to earn a living, I thought, wow, this is going to be good for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, I was like, wow, I'll do a lot of great concerts. And when I realized that it wasn't about the money and it was about something bigger, that's when I started getting it, you know,
mm-hmm.
that I was doing something that was bigger than making money. So all these, and you know, when, if I booked a thing and I said, Pete, would you come and, he would never take money. If he did, he'd donate the money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But as my brother used to say to me, who could live that way? Well, you know, he chased ideas and money chased him. He didn't chase money.
And he was like that the entire time you knew him and seemingly most of his
always,
life?
Always. He didn't carry a wallet. I once went to the Academy of Arts and Letters and I had to buy him three of these snark tuners, and he's sitting there with Meryl Streep, and I give him these tuners, and he starts reaching into his pocket to give me money. I said, no, Pete, you know, but it was all, like, crumpled up. It wasn't like he had a wallet, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way he was. He was a big ideas guy, you know. If the world could be a little bit like that, it would. We certainly need more people like that, I think, especially in today's day and age, you know.
So, yeah. I mean, I feel like we've touched on it a bit, but I mean, how did he change your life in that way? Did it change your outlook on everything?
Well, as I said, like, every time I retired from middle college, I still teach at the college, but every teaching that I've done, and when I work at Surprise Lake Camp, everything, I was in a department of one, so everything that I do as a teacher, and the fact that we moved to Beacon about a mile from where he lived. I mean, he's the one who introduced us here. We just moved here not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
He had, and so, yeah, I mean, he impacted a lot of what I do. Of course, you know, not everybody can earn their living trying to save the world.
Right.
You know, I mean, I write underscore music for television. I have to do whatever the project calls for.
Right.
But his influence is always there. He gave me lessons. Somebody gave me a banjo, you know, and I was not originally a banjo player. And having known Pete, I figured I'd bring it out there. I think it was only in the last, maybe I got it about 8 or 9 years ago. And I'd go to his house and he'd show me stuff on the banjo. And we'd spend a lot of time. He was very patient. One time we were out there, it was boiling hot in August, and he's like always a great teacher. And he said to me, "Paul, I think we've got to stop now." And I said, "Okay, Pete." So we go inside, And all of a sudden, he goes, "Did I ever show you this?" And he pulls his banjo off the wall. This machine surrounds hate and forces it to surrender. And he starts, and we're there like another hour and a half. You know what I mean? And that was who he was.
Be sure to follow Why the Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our YouTube channel for some additional great Why content. If you're so inclined, please leave us a review and let us know how we're doing.
Today's show is produced by myself and Heidi Hedquist, our reluctant executive producers of John Sove and Sandy Stone. Our graphic designer is Samantha Mustonen. Our intern is Randy Jeanette. The theme song was performed by the Electrosynthno-Magnetic Polyphonic Orchestra. This one's for Philippe. Thanks for joining us. Flash, we're coming home.